Welcome back, everyone, to the Decipher podcast. My guest today is Idan Plotnick from Apiro, coming live from Tel Aviv, Israel, which I'm very jealous about. You guys can't see it, but he's got a beautiful view of the entire city behind him. I'm kind of glad that we're not recording the video because everybody would be kind of upset about this. How are you, Dan?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah. It's my pleasure. I'm glad we got to do this. So I wanted to start by there's a whole bunch of things I wanted to ask you, because I think the idea that you guys have with Apiro is super interesting. And it's one of those areas of the security community or security industry that I think hasn't really gotten a lot of attention, maybe because it's not super sexy APT O'Day research type stuff. But I wanted to ask you first off, where the idea for this technology came from. Was it a problem that you had seen that you thought, okay, I have an idea for solving this, or how did it come about?
So first, I will say that it's, we called it a code risk platform. It's more than just identifying, abnormal developer behavior or things like that. It's looking at your entire software developing lifecycle and identifying, providing inventory and risk visibility across all your applications based on how developers behave and their security maturity, and based on the business impact and based on other things that we will talk about today. But going back to your original question, so I'm in the industry for 19 years plus. My last startup was acquired by Microsoft, and I was a general manager for engineering at Microsoft. And I just felt the pain. I just felt the challenge of how you, on one side, you want to move as fast as you can, make sure the business is growing faster and faster. You want to move from waterfall methodologies to agile development methodologies. But on the other hand, you don't want to release code with risks. You want to be able to assess the risk in, based on multidimensional approach. And for that, you need manual processes. You need risk assessment questionnaires. You need to make sure the people that answer these questionnaires really understand or, are into the details, or yeah, unless it's based on self-attestation and all the work that you are doing is for nothing. Because if you ask them, hey, do you have PII stored in log file? And they tell you, yes, but it's not. Or they're telling you no, and it is,
sure.
It's a pain to make it look story short. It's a challenge that I felt. And then I went to other large organizations and I asked them if they have the same challenge while releasing code to production. And then we said, hey, this is going to be a huge problem. And I'm talking 2 years back, less than 2 years, 16 months back. And this is where we said, hey, this is a huge problem, because it's not just yet another, a solution that sells FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. We're not selling, hey, I will attack you from the cloud, or I will attack you from your identity. You have here a mutual problem between the CEO, the CIO, the CISO, and the application security practitioners and the developers.
Yeah.
So you have a real problem that basically touches all the chain of command, or, all the managers.
So when you mentioned that your startup had been acquired by Microsoft a few years ago, and you had been in startup land before that. And so what was the difference when you got to Microsoft between the way that, the way that code was handled and, Microsoft obviously has a pretty mature SDLC, so they understand how code should be developed and assessed and, you know, hopefully scanned for vulnerabilities, and you're looking for all these known problems. How different is the way that a large organization such as Microsoft handles it from, you know, even a smaller, an SMB or even, you know, a startup?
It's a very, very good and complex question, okay? So in a mature secure development lifecycle processes, you start from a threat model, and then you go to a security design review, and then you go through compliance reviews in some cases, and then you go through a security code review, and then you go through a penetration testing, and then you go through vulnerability scannings throughout the CI/CD pipeline, and then you are overwhelmed. You're saying, what's going on here? Like, I have one person that is responsible for security across 100 developers. This is the best case, by the way. The ratio is 1 to 100 in the best case scenario. And then this guy says, hey, what's going on here? I went through all the process. I did all the phases, but now I have 1,000 vulnerabilities. I have 2,000 tasks to remediate. Mm-hmm. What's first? And then I'm telling you from an experience that you need to decide if you block the product from getting into your customers' hands, or you release with risks.
Yeah.
And this is the fundamental problem that Appuro solves. We said, stop chasing. So basically Gartner said, stop chasing vulnerabilities throughout the development process. What we did is we said to the industry, hey, one, vulnerabilities, it's too late in the process. You need to focus on risky code changes, okay? What are the material changes that you are introducing into your application? If you are changing the layout of your login page, who cares? Versus you change the logic of an API that's responsible for money transfer, this is a risky change. Now, yeah. I'm not talking about vulnerabilities or not. I'm talking about a funnel of changes that you are taking all these changes and passing them through the same vulnerability scanning pipeline. We are saying something else. We are saying, let's differentiate between changes. And we will not only differentiate between changes based on their technical aspects. We will differentiate between changes across their attack surface, technical impact, what's the business impact of the change, and what's the business impact of the application, what's the knowledge and the behavior of the developers that made these material changes, and only then we will decide which changes will go through a vulnerability scanning. You see? And yeah. Then you say, okay, I have 1,000 SQL injection, but I have only 5 of these SQL injections are relevant for an internet-facing API that is part of a user-facing application that serves 70% of the revenue of my organization, and the change, and it's an internet-facing API that holds the SQL injection. Now, mm-hmm. Go and remediate what's really matter to your business, and not what's really matter to your static code analysis tools that are generating so much noise without any context, without any deep understanding of the who is the developer that made this change. So right. This basically goes to, you know, your question. I can tell you, and it's not unique in Microsoft or any other places. They follow a process, and you must go through the process. And the same goes in the large banks and other large corporations, they need to go through all the gates of the secure SDLC or right. their application security program. And none of them are risk related. And what we are saying is stop your application security programs today. Stop them. Transform your application security program into application risk program or application risk management program. And speak at the same language as your CEOs or CIOs and even as a developer, even as an AppSec engineer, speak at the same language. This is our premise.
Well, it makes a ton of sense to me as someone who has literally never written a line of code since like eighth grade. But in your experience, how quickly do, you know, let's take three different roles. How quickly do developers understand what you guys are trying to accomplish? How quickly do the AppSec engineers get it? And then how quickly do, say, you know, the product managers who have to sign off on, okay, we're going to push this out to the real world, how quickly do they get it? And are they comfortable with it?
It's a great question. And I will take it. I will say, let's go to the basics. Okay. What's the basics? First, do not introduce to your developers anything. If you don't understand what you have, how many assets do you have? How many applications do you have? How many APIs do you have? What's the business impact of all your application? Do not bother to introduce anything to your developers. First, you as an AppSec engineer, go to the basics. And this is the first thing that we are doing with our customers. Plug Apiro into your source control manager via read-only API. Plug Apiro into your ticketing systems. Apiro will automatically scan all the history and all the text in your ticketing systems and build an inventory automatically. The developers doesn't know that we are there, okay? They don't know that Apiro is there at this point. We are saying the basic is scan automatically or learn automatically all your code bases throughout the history, enrich this data from all the ticketing systems that the ticketing systems holds features, bugs, user stories, high level component, and things like that. So your ticketing systems holds user stories, bugs, features, high-level designs. Apiro enrich this data while scanning the code. And then you as an AppSec, you know, I have 50,000 applications and only 10% of them are business critical. And I have 10,000 APIs that are internet facing that exposes PII data. Now, when I, as an AppSec engineer, I have an inventory, a risk-based inventory. Now I can decide what to do. I have exposed secrets in my code. You know, great. Let's say every time a developer introduces a secret into our code bases, automatically raise a flag in his or her pull request.
Yep.
Do not introduce them new tools. Never, ever. Developers hate when you introduce them new tools. So Apiro integrates into their existing environment and raise a flag and say, Dennis, you introduced a new exposed secret. Let's add Idan as a reviewer because Idan, a month ago, remediated this kind of risk.
Yeah.
So he can help you or give you some recommendation and say, you're using HashiCorp Vault in this application. Go to this line of code and see how, Jane Doe, added the secrets into HashiCorp. And this is how you help the developer remediate the risk early in the development process. Same goes, by the way, and this is a very, very innovative approach that we introduce into the market and say, even before you start coding, the product manager is writing a new user story in Jira. Apiro analyzes the content and raise a flag to the OPSEC guy and say, hey, this might be a risky user story. Go and talk to the product manager and have a contextual security review or a high-level threat model on that. And you don't need to rely on people to come and say, hey, can you help me with this user story because it might be risky. You can't rely on self-attestation anymore. And if I will go back with your permission to your first question.
Sure.
When what I learned in at Microsoft is that we had, I don't know, risk assessment questionnaire between 50 to 100 questions. What I learned is that, and without offending anyone, I found out that the developers were lying in these questionnaires, not in intentionally, because they didn't know the answer. And then at the end, I found myself investing a lot of money and resources on the wrong changes, on the wrong applications, on the wrong risks. And it's go back to the same problem that you cannot rely on humans to tell you where do you have risks. You need to do the heavy lifting for them and focus your resources, your OPSEC engineers, on the right risks. If it's in the design phase, great. If it's in the coding phase, you need to do it before the CI/CD pipeline and as early as you can.
Yeah. Humans are terrible at assessing risk. I think that's one of the things that I've learned over the last 20 years. We're Absolutely. Not good at that.
And you know what? It's not only that we are not good with that. It's a simple thing that our mind cannot hold so many risk factors. And when I say risk factors, I mean like from... Dennis, can you hear me?
Yeah.
So from where do you deploy this application? It's on-prem? It's in the cloud? Mm-hmm. What's the test coverage that you have on this application? Which data this application holds? PII, payment? What's the business impact? What's the knowledge of your contributors? What's the risk of the open source code? What's the risk of the infrastructure as code? What is the risk of the application code? What's the attack surface? What's the outcome from your third-party scanning tools? Or what are the security controls? So many risk factors that a human being cannot calculate everything in a human mind. You need a machine to do that for you and then just point you to the right direction. And say, Dennis, go here on this specific change. This is the most risky change in your application. Go and have a meaningful conversation with the developer. Or bringing automatically the compliance officer because you added PII to the application.
Right. And, you know, software security experts for years have been saying, we need to build secure software and get the security people as, you know, involved as early in the process as possible. It's a lot more efficient than trying to secure something after the fact. You know, obviously the built-in versus built-on debate there. And this to me seems like something that is completely built to work in that process the way that software is built and delivered now, as opposed to the way it was delivered like 20 years ago, where it was, we build a point release, push that out every 6 months. And now everything is, you know, as you said, CI/CD, and it's literally delivered hundreds of times a day. So if you're not paying attention to security at the very beginning of the process, you're going to have so many more problems later on, it seems.
I totally agree. And I think everyone bought, you know, they are into it. Like every company from for the last, I don't know, 16 months, I was talking with more than 250 companies from 50 developers shop to 20,000 developers. Everyone are they bought the idea that they need to integrate security as early as they can. Now, the problem is, and from our point of view, getting security into the CI/CD pipeline, in some cases, it's good, but it's too late. Hmm. You want security to be one on the design phase to tell you to prioritize across all the feature requests, all the user story, to prioritize what are the most risky features that are going to be developed in the next release, and then handle them at the design phase and run contextual threat models or security design reviews as early as you can. And the second phase before the CI/CD pipeline is, I can say it depends on what's your development processes, but you can run the security assessment or the risk assessment on your develop branch or the feature branch, okay, before the main branch, before you trigger the vulnerability scanning processes. And there, at this point, you can do a few things. One, as I told you, you can trigger automatic workflows, mm-hmm, and say, if I have these types of changes, I need to bring in a pen tester before I even release this code throughout the pipeline, because a pen tester might find vulnerabilities that you can't find in an automatic tools. And if he will find these vulnerabilities on these critical or material changes, then when it will go through the pipeline, it will reduce the noise that I will get at the end of the process. Same goes for a compliance review, or same goes for, you know what? I don't have manual people, like people that will run manual processes, and I want to define set of definitions of what is a material change at the development process, and then send only these material change, risky material changes throughout the pipeline, and like do a fork in the road and say, yeah, if it's not a risky material change, pass it and deploy directly to production. If it's a risky material change, go through my static code analysis tools or composition analysis tool, you know? And this is how you streamline the security early in the development process. And in some cases, as I mentioned earlier, you can integrate the process into the pull request when the developer is the right person to remediate the risk. So, for example, if you have if the developer introduced a PII to the application, then you can't. It's not efficient to tell to the developer, hey, you introduced a material change. You introduced a PII, because the compliance officer needs to approve the PII before releasing to production. So sure, you can bring him in an automatic manner.
Is there a way, and I have no idea if this is possible or not, but is there a way to introduce this kind of technology and mindset, like, for developers as they're learning to code, you know, at university or in their, you know, initial jobs out of school, where they're trying to figure out how software is actually built?
So there are things that you can do, and there are things that you can't do.
Okay.
For example, to learn the basics, like, you need to validate the input when you get data from an untrusted entity into, sure, your application. You need to sanitize the data when you store it to a database, or things like that. You can learn what's the basics for writing secure software, of course. But there are risks that you can't teach at school. And again, I'm going back to the example of, I'm a developer, I accidentally added your home address and amount of money that you have in the bank to an internet facing API. It's not a vulnerability, but it's a risk. I can't teach you this is based on the context of the application, based on the context of the company that you are working on. And so the answer is yes, the basics, but no for the other risks that are taken from the essence of the application or the business, the industry that you are in.
Yeah.
This is what we are trying to automate. And if you, just to give you another example, we are working, I can't expose right now the name of the vendor, but we are working with a large security training vendor to run, because we have a knowledge and an experience profile on each one of the developers. We know that you are a top-notch backend developer that deals with sensitive data. We can trigger contextual training while you are developing the code.
See, to me, it does. That part, the context piece of it, to me, is what really makes the big difference. Because, you know, as you mentioned, there's vuln scanning tools, there's static analysis, there's all these different ways to find bugs in code. But if you don't have a context for, this developer has a lot of experience with this application, knows what the risks are, knows he or she made this change in this way, and as you know, has been working on this app since its inception, or it's a completely inexperienced developer who is new to this project and probably shouldn't have made this change, that there's a big difference. You know, people love to talk about security as a series of trade-offs, but it all, the context matters in those kind of decisions.
Spot on. This is the fundamental, this is exactly what Apuro is doing. And we're trying to put context into the code changes that you are doing, and not, as I mentioned, not only the context that it is technical.
Yeah.
The context of who are you? What's your knowledge across the history? By the way, you in Apuro, let's say you're working in this organization for 5 years. We and for the last 4 years you worked as a backend developer, and now you're working as a front-end developer. We will look at you, even if you're working for 5 years at the same company, we will look at you as a risky, it depends on the changes, as a risky as a risk factor into the code change itself, because you're writing front-end code only last, I don't know, a few months, you know? So you always need to look at the developer and who reviewed the code of this developer and what's their knowledge, because from my experience, I saw a scenarios where, you know, you and I, we are friends and we're sitting together at the same room, and you are a front-end developer, I'm a back-end developer, and asking you, Dennis, can you approve my pull request? I want to show my boss that I'm moving faster. And this is a risk factor, you know? But it's only one. It's only one. As I mentioned, we have so many, as we are always saying, code risk is multidimensional. You know, it's a human factor, it's a technical factor, it's business impacts, and more and more and more.
So, Idan, how does the learning process for the tool itself work? Like, once it's, you know, deployed in my environment, how does it learn that context about the developers and what they've been working on and what their, you know, roles and experience are?
So I can't expose the, you know, the nitty gritty.
That's the secret part. Yeah.
Secrets behind it, but in high level, it's very simple. you connect us to the source control manager, like GitHub, GitLab, Bitbucket, Azure DevOps. We support all of them via read-only API. You provide us access with read-only, and then you connect our platform into your ticketing systems, as I mentioned, where you manage your epics, bugs, features, user stories, and so on and so forth. Yeah. Appure will start scanning the entire history of all your code bases. Appure will enrich the code analysis with what you are writing in the Jira tickets, for example, if we are talking about Jira. Appure will enrich this data from other places and analyze, like, running NLP algorithms on the texts themselves, itself.
Yeah.
And then we will build it's kind of a simple graph of who is interacting with who and when. And the secret sauce is not on understanding the developer knowledge and experience. The secret sauce is eventually how to identify what is a material change. Like, as I mentioned earlier, if I'm giving you a very simplistic, example, if you change the color coding of the login page versus you change the logic of a module in the application that responsible for transferring money, like billions of dollars a day or an hour, this is a material change. And now when you understand that this is a material change, now let's look at who is the developer and what's the context and where did you change this code, from which device, what's your location, who reviewed your code, and more data that we can enrich from different places. Again, I just told you about two data sources, but we can connect to your API gateways and to other production systems to enrich the data of the code change itself.
Yeah.
There are other factors of learning who are you, and one of the things that maybe worth mentioning here is that you can't scan the code as a snapshot point in time, and this is the patent behind the Appure. You can't scan a snapshot point in time and say, hey, I understand the code. You need to look at Dennis as an identity across the history, and also across different repositories and across different applications. And then we can learn your knowledge. As I mentioned, in one application, you can be a top-notch backend developer, and on the other one, you can be a newbie front-end developer, or you move to be a product manager. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, it all makes sense. I mean, it's a little bit like if somebody asks you, hey, do you know this person? You're like, oh yeah, we went to college together 25 years ago. He was great back then. But if you haven't seen him since then, you don't really know what kind of person that guy is. You can vouch for what they were like back then, but you don't know what they've done.
I really, really like this analogy.
It's yours. You can have it. Feel free to use it.
It's recorded.
Yeah, that's right. It's on the record. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, obviously the last few months, there's been lots of news about supply chain attacks, and this is not a new problem. It's a very, very old problem. Getting backdoors or malicious code into a code base is like one of the older attack techniques and a very useful one. And I wanted to see, what are your thoughts on how the techniques that you guys have developed would, help any software vendor protect against that kind of thing, because it's not just big software vendors that have to worry about that. You know, we've seen, you know, supply chain attacks on much smaller pieces of software than SolarWinds or, you know, Microsoft, for example. Tons of smaller little tools that don't make huge headlines.
So a lot of customers approached us when SolarWinds, you know, happened and mm-hmm. and was published in the news. And we developed a very, like, a unique technology. We wrote 3 patents on this technology. And what we said is the following. We already know the knowledge and the behavior of the developers. We already deeply understand the code. We understand the code components, security controls, data, and the business impact of every application. The missing part is how we can go and analyze the binary before you shipped it to your customers. In the case of SolarWinds, what happened there, I'm sure our audience, they know that the attackers breached the CIC, the build server, and right. injected the code into the binary before signing it. So what we did is we developed an API where every build server can send the binary to a Apiro. We are analyzing, doing reverse engineering to the binary itself. And we compare, or basically extract all the possible logic flows and symbols. And we clean all the auto-generated compiler logic. And then we say, hey, we look at the binary and we see code changes that we can't see in the source control manager. We can't see this code in GitHub. How come, like, the developer triggered the build process through GitHub? He wrote the code. He committed the code that initiated this build process that eventually generated this DLL file.
Yeah.
How come the code that we see in the DLL, inside the DLL, or the binary file, we can't find it in the source control manager? And this is where we are raising a flag, we are breaking the build, and we are saying, you have a suspicious build, and these are the methods, and these are the code changes that we see in the binary file, and we can't see in the source code repository. And we can alert to the SOC team, we can alert to the developer, we can alert to the application security owner. And this is what we did to be able to prevent, not to detect, to prevent the case of SolarWinds build time attacks that will be able to that will might affect other customers. Another attack vector that I think will be there in the wild, and we will hear about it in the next few months. Maybe because of the Microsoft Exchange zero-day exploit, which allows attackers to get into the network very easily. But I think that it will be a new attack vector where the attackers will compromise a developer's account, and on behalf of a legitimate account will commit malicious code, which eventually will get through the supply chain process and be delivered to customers. So what we did to approach this kind of attack vector, we used our knowledge about every developer, and we built a behavioral model. By the way, this is my previous startup. So my previous startup, Errato, we were pioneers in the UEBA space, in the user and entity behavior analytics space. So we took some of the concepts of UEBA and implement them on developers and code changes. And now we can raise a flag and say, hey, Dennis committed an abnormal commit because he's using, he did it in an abnormal hours or from different locations or from a front-end developer committed back-end code and so on and so forth. So yeah. I think these two attack vectors, we will see them in the wild more often, like attacking the build process and injecting the code before signing the binary and ship it to, in this case, Microsoft, FireEye, and all other government agencies. And the new attack vector, which the audience needs to pay attention that here they heard about this attack vector for the first time. It's just compromising a legitimate account and commit the code from there. I think that this is my view on, you know, the supply chain attack. And I always, for every customer that I'm talking to, I'm telling them, do not install new updates from vendors without scanning their code. You need to have, I don't know if it's a new regulation or whatever, but I think that large enterprises that are relying on vendors, it's the risk assessment questionnaires of the vendor assessment processes are not enough. It's, again, it's self-attestation. You need to scan their code with Apiro or with other vendors and make sure that the binaries that they shipped to you are aligned with the source code that they have in their source control manager. I'm not talking about vulnerabilities. I'm not talking about SQL injection. I'm not talking about CSRF and cross-site scripting. I'm not talking about it. I'm talking about something simple. Just make sure that the code that I'm deploying in, like, the binaries that I'm deploying as a bank are aligned with the source code of my vendors. This is it.
Yeah. The problem comes in when, you know, for the last 15 or 20 years, everybody's been saying patch as quickly as you can and just deploy these things so that you're protected against the exchange O-days or whatever it happens to be. But, so that mentality of like updating stuff as soon as possible is out there for sure. It's not everybody can do it, but I understand what you're saying.
And I understand what you're saying because I want to patch as fast as I can. But you can automate the validation or the verification of the binary versus source code. You can do it automatically. You don't need to wait for, I don't know, a person to come and grab the binary and do it in a manual manner.
Right.
So it shouldn't affect the way that you implement patches throughout, you know, your current processes. You just need another automated process.
I think the last thing I wanted to ask you, I know I've taken up a lot of your time, is, and I'm sure that you've thought about this, and I'm sure you guys have had a ton of discussions about it. In terms of the competition, is this something that, say, the big software houses like Microsoft, like Google, like, you know, whoever it happens to be, can build into their own processes? Can they build their own version of what you guys are doing? Or is it, you know, do they want to invest that money, I guess?
We want competition. We need competition to build a big market.
Understood.
Absolutely. And you know what? I don't know. Maybe we'll open our patents to others to, you know, to expand the market. We introduced a lot of new concepts to the, risk management, DevSecOps, application security, and even cloud security domains. Yep. We introduced a new concept, which is focus on material changes before they will become vulnerabilities. We introduce a new concept of understanding the developer knowledge and experience when assessing the risk of applications. We introduce the concept of automatically identifying what is the business impact of applications. So honestly, I want them to do that. And I want to have competition, and I want to have a big market, because I think, and this is, you know, I'm a big believer in a risk-based approach. And I think that if we will automate it, our delivery processes will be much faster and much more accurate. And we will finally can, you know, we have a promise, like the promise of DevSecOps is to release faster. It's not. You know, right now, what's happening in the DevSecOps industry, it's cacophony. Too many tools, too many processes, too many vulnerabilities, too many. And we want to make some order or automate these processes based on a risk-based approach. And hopefully, I don't know, maybe we will partner with the big ones and integrate our technology into their software developing lifecycle or secure software developing lifecycle, or they will build their own.
All right, cool, man. Well, this is a lot of fun. I really appreciate you doing this, Idan. This is a super fun conversation. I really look forward to seeing how you guys do. It's a great idea.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed, and invite me more often.
I will. You're in the rotation. Absolutely.
Great.
All right. Thanks. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Well, you were hacking the planet.